Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. April is Autism Awareness Month, and how much material, how many points of view are there that there are on the topic, on the causes, the possible cures, the living with and living beside people who are on the autism spectrum. 2010 could be the autism year, as far as I'm concerned, and there still wouldn't be enough time to talk about everything there is to talk about with autism, you know, both troubling and fascinating and mysterious and so many other things. WOSU's Christopher Purdy is doing a yeoman's job interviewing folks. You can go to all of those interviews at WOSU.org and just go WOSU.org/autism and get to all of it. With me in the studio today is Jeffrey Siegel. He's received his Master's of Social Work at OSU, and he works with the MRDD Jewish population in Columbus. Jeff is coordinator of Aspirations, a social support group program for young adults with autism spectrum disorders at the Neisinger Center at OSU. Welcome to the show, Jeffrey.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Also, Dr. Angela Denny works as a consultant. She is co-facilitator at the Neisong Center with Jeff Siegel and also is president of the Autism Society of Central Ohio and a parent of a child on the autism spectrum. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Appreciate it. Joining us a little bit later is Jared Smalley. He anchors NBC4's series, The Autism Puzzle. You may know him as well as the sports director for NBC4. He'll be joining us in about 15 minutes, so we're excited about that. He also is the father of Brady and Tyler, who are both on the autism spectrum. Before I move on, free showing tonight of The Horse Boy. It's a documentary about Rupert Isaacson's journey with his son to the wild horses of Mongolia. There'll be a panel discussion afterward. For information on all of that, go to WOSU.org/all sides. Now, time to start our talk. There's so much change over the years. I'm not even sure back when I first became aware of the whole idea of autism. I'm not even sure there was a label for it back then, but we knew there was something going on back in the 60s. When did it burst onto the scene as something identifiable? Jeffrey?
I think that, if you go into sort of the diagnostic manual that is used by mental health professionals, it really didn't – the term Asperger's didn't have an official official recognition in that manual until 1994. Huh. And so you're really beginning to see a lot of people coming out that might that have had different character traits before that – sort of set themselves differently and have suddenly – we're giving a name to this and recognizing their particular issues and what they're going through.
And I might add there was a wave of increased awareness that started around the 90s. Those that, for lack of a better word, had more distinct characteristics were more recognizable in earlier years, yet they were few and far between. But then the prevalence increased, as well as the understanding of the ability to diagnose more clearly and differentiate between different nuances of disorders. That emerged really around 1990, though. I'm with the Autism Society, and it's a grassroots support group that started 40 years ago. So, I mean, it's been on the horizon, but it's the increase in numbers has really become aware to across the globe since, I would say, around the 90s.
The prevalence, when you talk about prevalence, is that the known prevalence or the actual prevalence has increased? In other words, there are more people being diagnosed than there would have been even back in the 60s. There are more of them.
Yes. And now when you talk –
more cases, I guess.
And there's different schools of thought on that. And there's no definitive answer. But you have one school of thought is, well, it's been there. But they were captured in different categories. Okay. Because they were tapped into those diagnostic classifications that they used at the time, which in some cases that was the MR diagnostic code, the mental retardation. Okay. So you might have someone who may have been classified as mild because they didn't know where else to put them in terms of their classification codes. It would end up, though, that there was an if you talk to folks that worked in the institutions in the 70s, they will say, I know that person had a lot going on. It just didn't get out there. And in retrospect, when you talk to those folks that worked with those individuals back then, they'll say, you know, because of my awareness today of the autism spectrum, I wonder if that individual who's in their 50s and 60s today wasn't one of those lost souls that really would have fit that criteria today.
Or somebody you know that isn't necessarily a lost soul but is different, and you can, you know, we're so much better educated about what Asperger's syndrome is and that kind of a thing. It's more, it's not as profound, but it's different.
Exactly. and what I will say is, you know, but those are the ones that learned to swim. They had a choice. They could either sink or swim. And they swam because of, again, you had the community supports regardless of what their label was.
Yeah, Jeffrey.
Often you find a lot of people that I find coming in for an interview for aspirations, when I talk to them about their history, and a lot of them have been diagnosed with a variety of different diagnoses, obsessive compulsive, bipolar, different things, and not to say that those diagnoses were wrong, but they find over time that these were different characteristics. When they start adding them up and somebody really sort of looks at all these things and sort of adds all the pieces together, they finally say, well, you know, let's look at Asperger's or let's look at the autism spectrum and see if they fit on there. And it seems that because of these different things that they come out, their characteristics lead to that diagnosis eventually. So a lot of them have been walking around, have had this, you know, unofficially, they realize themselves. Some of them at the age of 25, 26 they get this official diagnosis and they'll say to me, you know, I always knew that I was different. I knew I had different situations, but could never put a name with it.
Well, there are positive characteristics too often, and they're often overlooked or overshadowed by what is perceived as negative, right? I mean, that ability to focus on one thing versus ADD, you know, the kind of the opposite of that.
I'm biased, but I would actually say there's more positive. Mm-hmm. It's like anyone that you meet that beats to a different – I don't want to say everybody beats to a different drum that's on the spectrum. But if you're a person that's open to just being with another individual, regardless of what their label is, you're going to have a much richer experience than if you're going to be struggling to fit in every day of your life. It's just there are a lot of strengths and positive aspects. It's just taking the time, slowing down, listening, and being with that individual as opposed to pushing your own agenda, actually.
There's been a lot of speculation about the causes. By the way, we're talking about autism on All Sides with Ann Fisher and WOSU 820. And my guests are Jeffrey Siegel, program coordinator at OSU's Neisinger Center, Aspirations program coordinator at the OSU Neisinger Center. Sorry about that. And also Angela Denny. She is president of the Autism Society, the Central Ohio chapter, and also is at Aspirations. The speculations about the causes seems to get a lot more ink and airtime these days than anything. And of course, that's because of the controversy over vaccinations and whether they cause it. Now, there's been some new research on that lately that's largely debunked the vaccination issue as a cause. But where do you weigh in on that? What do you think?
I mean, there's been a lot of research saying that it is not, that the two are not linked. I really, not being a medical expert, it's not my position to really weigh in on it either way. I know that it's very hard for parents. I know that a lot of times we as parents, no matter what our situation is with kids, we're looking for something to grasp. And I can understand where some people might be looking towards that. But most of the research today does indicate that it's not true. I've read news and, you know, the different reports I've read outside of the actual research have indicated as well that there's growing questions about the originator of this in terms of their credibility, their trustworthiness and whatnot. But again, it's, you know, I can understand when a parent goes through.
As far as the relationship of with the, like Jeff was saying, the relationship of the vaccine to being having a causal relationship to the symptoms that are presented with autism spectrum, there has been great debate and with that. Yet, as myself, I'm not a medical professional either, but the consensus, at least among those who try to weigh the pros and cons of that argument, the choice that they have made on the ground, and I've heard a number of physicians that have made this choice with their own recommendations for their grandchildren, is, you know, there's not enough hard evidence to suggest that you should just not vaccinate. But if there is a compromised immune system with that child, or if that individual has a predisposition to have a reaction to the quantity or the amount of the vaccination that's given or the number, then let's spread it out and let's see. Let's wait till that individual is a little bit older. But they are still given the choice, the parents. But it's, I can't say enough that you just really need to educate yourself on that and not just buy into one argument versus the other. And as far as the causality, you know, there is that biomedical, the environmental component, that they do believe there's some credence to that argument, because we haven't been able to test all of the environmental toxins that have been created in the last generation to preserve our food, to produce large quantities of plastic products. So
and ultimately, it could be many things that cause it. It doesn't have to be one particular thing. It could be many.
Yes, a combination of sorts, kind of like the stress diachesis. You know, if you have a vulnerability, if it reaches that certain point based on the amount of exposure that you get, then you're going to tip one way or the other. And if the individual has a predisposition to develop autistic-like symptoms and have those neurological deficits as a result, then their journey for closing the gap will be more challenging than maybe another one that doesn't have that compromised system, possibly.
I wanted to talk about these issues at the outset so that we could spend the rest of the time talking about, you know, what you do at Neisinger and what folks are doing around the world to address and to live with and help folks on the spectrum live more fulfilling lives. So I want to get to that when we return. And when we return, joining us will be Jared Smalley. He's a sports director at NBC4. He also anchors NBC4's series, The Autism Puzzle. And he's the father of Brady and Tyler, who are both on the autism spectrum. So we'll be welcoming him to the show in a few minutes. In the meantime, if you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. It's Autism Awareness Month. Let's become more aware this hour on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Get the stories behind the headlines every day on All Things Considered.
The numbers are startling. Ohio's maternal death rate has more than doubled over the past two decades. Some suggest the changes in record-keeping account for the increase.
Some of it is certainly maybe due to the identification of cases.
She says overall, women are higher risk these days.
On your drive home, listen to award-winning coverage from the WOSU news team on WOSU 89.7 FM.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. 46 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:20 this morning. Sunshine today and a high of 55 degrees. Clear skies tonight with areas of frost after midnight and a low of 33.
Support for WOSU today comes from the Friends of the Broad Street Presbyterian Church. More information is located on the web at bspc.org.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's Autism Awareness Hour on All Sides with Ann Fisher. We could spend many, many hours talking about this issue, and I hope we do in coming months and years. But for now, we're going to move on to from the incidents and those kind of statistical type issues and the causation to the treatment and how folks on the autism spectrum are living with it. Welcome to the show, Jared Smalley, sports director at NBC4 and also anchors the NBC4's series, The Autism Puzzle. Jared, thanks for joining the show.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good.
You know, and also with us today is Angela Denny. She's president of the Autism Society, the Central Ohio chapter, and she works with Jeffrey Siegel, who's also in the studio at the Aspirations program at the OSU Neisinger Center. Jared, two of your boys. I don't know how many children you have, but you have two boys who are on the autism spectrum.
Yep, those are my two, Brady and Tyler. Brady's four, mm-hmm. and Tyler is two.
How did you become an activist or an advocate, and you know, what triggered that route for you? Because not everybody does, but I will say a lot of people I know who have kids who are on the autism spectrum are advocates.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of what you have to become. I'm sort of shy about that term, but I know that a lot of parents have to really become advocates for their own kids, in particular because of kind of the minefield that's out there to get your kids the proper therapies and resources that they need. And it's a difficult process. It takes a lot of time, a lot of phone calls, a lot of planning, getting to know the right people. To get them into the proper therapies, speech and occupational therapy and those sorts of things. So you sort of have to become an advocate for your child. And then from a TV standpoint, from what we're trying to do at the station, mm-hmm. I think our platform is really just about education. We talk to hundreds of people for every show that we do. And it's interesting the amount of information that you get just from talking to people, just from networking, just from understanding people's different situations. And I think we just try to provide people with an honest look at what's out there, what's going on, and some of the real stories that people who deal with autism face in the world in which we all live. It's kind of an interesting scenario that a lot of these people live with.
In the book the Horse Boy, I thought it was one reviewer of that. I'm sorry, not in the book, the movie. I thought one reviewer put it beautifully. They said that that what we're left with isn't whether or not shamanism cures autism, because of course this is about a fellow who brings his son all the way to Mongolia to meet shamans and the wild horses of Mongolia. But the reviewer said it's not about whether or not shamanism cures autism, but a more allegorical example of what happens when people seek solutions beyond the boundaries of Western thought.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I wondered how much did you just have to open up your world to embrace this challenge?
You know, it's interesting. When you are told that you have a child who has autism, when you first get that diagnosis, it does not come with a playbook. It doesn't come with a, you know, here's what you need to do right now, and here's what's going to help you get through this. Because there's no one right way to go. There's no one proper course for every child. Every child is unique. If you've met one kid who has autism, you've met one. You've met one adult. You know, everybody has their own challenges. And there's no one proper therapy. There are many that are, of course, are more scientifically proven that work for most kids, like ABA therapy, speech therapy, occupational therapy. Mm-hmm. But then there's the more some of those, like the biomedical approaches that are out there that people are taking now, that are not as scientifically proven. But it's kind of that theory that you will resort to things that you know are not scientifically backed up because there's hope involved in those. And in many cases, people, you know, have seen improvements or great results for their kids. So, yeah, it's kind of that same, you don't care what works. You don't care what it's called. You don't care where you find it. You just hope that you find something that works.
Jeffrey Siegel, how something like The Horse Boy, it's a wonderful documentary. It doesn't belabor some sort of optimism about whether this would work for everybody. But is there a fear that a documentary like that can give people unwarranted optimism?
I think with any kind of situation, there's always a fear in some people's minds that if they see this, they're going to generalize. But it really works both ways, because then there are people that react to it and say, well, they might say, well, there's a component of it that's horse therapy. So horse therapy must be, you know, voodoo economics or something. Not voodoo economics, but it must be voodooism or something, you know. And they'll associate it with that. I think it can go either way. And I think a parent really needs to be able, as Jared said, they make those decisions. And I think that they have to make those decisions. In the end, you need to listen to the professionals, and you need to take that advice. You need to take all the information that you get, and you ultimately have to decide to go with what works for you.
See, Jared, one thing that the father in the documentary said was that he loved horses. He had grown up riding them, but he had specifically kept his son, Rowan, from horses until he unexpectedly ran up to a horse one day, and then he realized this connection with them. As a parent, are there some things that you're wondering, am I keeping my child from something to protect them, and it may be the very thing that they identify with?
I can't really, for me, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. But I'm certain that that's the case for a lot of parents. There's a lot of fear involved.
Yeah.
Because you just don't know how they're going to react in all of these unique situations, especially in social situations, which is one of the main impairments related to autism, is the ability to relate to people, especially people close to you. It's kind of an interesting little situation when you get them around peers and you get them around kids who have maybe a similar ability level to them. For example, a lot of us, when we go to these group therapy classes, I take my little boy every Saturday morning, Tyler, to a class that is about five or six kids that are just like, it's very similar to his ability level, maybe some of them diagnosed, but not all of them. And to see if he will notice them, to see if he'll interact with them. And he really doesn't. And I think that's probably the unknown, is that when you put them in that situation, you don't know how they're going to react. And the truth is, They probably don't know either.
Dr. Denny?
Well, as far as I had a few comments. Back to the horse boy question. I think there, like any parent of a child, you have to keep that balancing act of when do I let them take a risk and when do I hold back and keep them safe. As far as the horse boy goes, I think we do that in every day of our lives. I make a conscious effort to let her take calculated risks, because you have to have everyday victories. You have a very high degree of anxiety and angst when you're in the process of trying to figure out the world around you, and certain things are not intuitively coming to you, like to interact with one another, interacting with a peer, or doing what the expectations of society are for you in this Western culture. The take home with the horse boy for me was two-pronged. You had the cultural exposure that was different from ours, and if you open yourself up to that mindset, it really does say that some of the disability is imposed on that individual because of the labels that we give them to create order in our own mind of understanding. And it's more of a clean slate when you go to a different culture. The other piece is the component of just seeing your child connect with something. You run with it, just like you would with anyone else. If your kid is showing a propensity toward the arts, you know, you capture that, and you see if that's an area where they're going to bloom. In this instance, you had, he already was around horses. Okay, here he is. He's showing some initiation to connect with the horse, which is wonderful, because then you can start working on some of the core deficits, maybe starting with the interactions with a horse, because they start to experience some experience sharing, like Jared was talking about peer relations. Mm-hmm. Well, you have to start at baby steps, and they to help them share different perspectives, because that's one of the deficits. Dynamic, being able to function in a dynamic system as opposed to a static system. That's a real challenge. But if you as a parent are there to mentor and guide, you just have to take it step by step. And even though developmentally the expectation is that they should be doing something by a certain age, doesn't mean that they're not going to get there maybe 3 or 4 years later. But you just have, it's a marathon. It really is. It's not a sprint.
Jeffrey Siegel, at Neisinger Center, or the Aspirations Program, isn't that working with older kids rather than young? We also often think and talk about kids as they're all, you know, as if they're all younger and they never change, but they do.
They grow up. And our Aspirations Program started working with individuals 18 and older, primarily 18 to 25, 26. We now really cover, because we created a second group, we cover ages 13 to 17, and 18 to 30, and sometimes 31, 32, depending upon how they fit with the group. It varies. Some of the people have had the diagnosis of Asperger's since they have been young. Some have just had the diagnosis. Somebody came and emailed me yesterday for an appointment who was just is 33, and they were just diagnosed a week or two ago, and found out about the program, wanted to know what they could do. And the key thing that I find with all of them is that I always emphasize is that everybody everybody grows up and can accomplish, find their niche in society, find what works best for them, and can shine. And this is important for them to remember. I think that the greatest thing was with Jared's, with the autism puzzle. I had a lot of people comment to me that seeing these young adults talking, sharing their lives, still sharing some of their challenges and whatnot that they're still going through. They're not success stories, so to speak, but that they've grown up and that they've moved on and they're trying to work things out and have made certain accomplishments. That it should, I think it offers hope to parents of younger children that, you know, there is a future ahead.
There is a future ahead. Jared Smalley, how do you temper your hopes and dreams that we all have? You know, it doesn't matter who your kid is, with the reality that so far, currently, that outside society still discriminates, still holds it against people when they have this kind of a life.
You know, it's funny. Christopher Purdy actually sent me an email this morning about kind of an underemployment issue with people with autism, especially the last few years because of the economic downturn. That, you know, employers aren't really they're not giving those kind of opportunities as much as they maybe did in the past to people who have an Asperger's diagnosis or an autism diagnosis, or the ones who are getting jobs are underemployed. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that I thought was so striking about when we had, just for background, on our last show, the one that aired last week, we actually had the group from Aspirations on our show. We had about seven folks in our station to talk about things. And the one thing I noticed is this, you know, obviously we knew they were, you know, just remarkably intelligent people and very proud people. And just there was a lack of there was an underemployment issue among the people there. And we talked about that a little bit, about how, you know, they had gone through training at Goodwill to maybe work in IT or other areas that are, you know, definitely a high impact type of a job. And, you know, many were working as cashiers and janitorial employees and those sorts of things, which is fine. But definitely their capabilities seem to be on a much higher end. Employers aren't taking that kind of a risk. So, yeah, I definitely think that's a significant issue. And the one thing you said I think is very important, too. You're right. When you first get that diagnosis and you're a parent, I remember the first thing I thought of. I thought of my dad. My dad's a high school football coach. And I thought about all the things that Brady wasn't going to be able to do. And one of the reasons you have children is so you sort of envision this life for them, this mm-hmm. pattern of how it's all going to go. And I remember thinking, you know, my dad is never going to get a chance to watch his grandson play football. And I just thought of everything that he wasn't going to be able to do. And I think back and I just think about how selfish that was and how negative it was. And now, thankfully, I definitely don't think in those terms. And yeah, you definitely think about their capabilities as opposed to the disabilities now. And thankfully, you know, everybody in my family also buys into that as well.
I know you have to take off in a sec, but we're going to have to take a break. But there was a wonderful story in the Autism Puzzle about the kid who was a football player, very successful football player, high school football player. Is that?
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't think you wrote it, but it did shed a lot of light on the idea that we have these preconceived notions about what an ability is. And that, you know, I wish I had the ability of many people who have the brilliance to focus on one thing. And that is an ability that I, you know, I think I have ADD, as a matter of fact, as far as true confessions go. But that makes me good at what I do sometimes, too. That people overlook, and we always look at some autism or someone on the autism spectrum in a negative light.
Look. I think we all have some form of autism.
Or ADD, I like to think.
Exactly. And there is some unique behavior in all of us,
yeah,
that probably fits into that that pattern of behavior, I would imagine. I just think it's interesting how everything is given, you know, a certain, you know, this kid fits in a PDD and OS, this kid fits in Asperger's, this kid mm-hmm. fits in autism. We all have something. But I'll tell you this. I mean, I just think that what I've learned in the past couple years is that that those behaviors are, in the grand scheme, not that important. You look at what they can do, not maybe their impairments. And I just think that once you're around these kids, and yes, they do grow up, once you're around these adults, you have a whole new appreciation for functioning in society, what it takes. And frankly, the one thing that I will say about everybody who works with people with autism is their patience level. People don't want to wait 5 minutes at the coffee shop. These are people who are just incredibly patient and understanding and calm. And that's impacted me more than anything.
You know,
I'm more patient now than I've ever been in my life because of it.
You know, Jared, one thing the father in the documentary said about himself was that he is a better father.
Sure.
Because sure. His child is on the spectrum.
Yeah.
How
I mean, there's
feel?
Only one way you can go. I mean, mm-hmm. you can only get better. And I just think when you're facing something like this because of all the stress that's involved from your whole outlook changes. You're going to go through therapies and you're going to go through extreme financial distress because there's really a lack of insurance coverage for a lot of these therapies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're going to go through all of these forms of personal and family stress. How are you going to handle it?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that definitely it challenges you. It presses you, but it also, I think, brings out your best. I think it brings out sides that you didn't maybe know that you had before. And, yeah, that probably does make you a better parent.
Jared, we got to let you go. I know. Thanks for taking the time to join us today.
It was nice to be with you all. Good to talk to you. Jeff, Angela.
You too.
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Jared.
That was Jared Smalley, NBC4 Sports Director and Autism Advocate. We have to take another break. Too many this time on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Get more radio. The WOSU Spring Membership Drive begins soon. And if we raise $20,000 before it begins, we'll take one day off the drive. Get more programming and less pledging when you make your fast and easy gift to WOSU. Help us reach our $175,000 goal and get more of the radio you love to listen to by making your contribution now. Visit WOSU.org/pledgefree to make your pledge.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. 47 degrees in downtown Columbus. Sunshine today, a high of 55. Clear skies tonight with areas of frost after midnight and a low of 33 degrees. Some morning frost on Wednesday and then sunshine in the afternoon and a high of 60.
Support for WOSU comes from the law firm Isaac Brandt Ledman and Teeter, offering legal services to Central Ohio since 1936. Isaac Brandt Ledman and Teeter, big enough to win, small enough to care. On the web at isaacbrandt.com.
And in just about 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here in a conversation with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein about the legacy of their investigative reporting of the Watergate scandal, their observations on the presidency, and the policy process in Washington. They'll also talk about the current state of journalism and investigative reporting in the United States. Join us at 11 for All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 820.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about autism. It's Autism Awareness Month, the month of April. My guest, Angela Denny. She's president of the Autism Society, the Central Ohio chapter of the Autism Society, and she is also works with Jeffrey Siegel at the Aspirations Program at OSU's Neisinger Center. We were talking about discrimination or underemployment of people who are on the spectrum, Angela, but that's not just for people with autism.
Correct. There's a disparity between the employment of individuals with disabilities versus those without disabilities, even when you compare educational status as well as gender and age. So the challenge with our folks with disabilities, what's been really good is the opportunity to get higher education is greater, which also increases your employability factor. But what happens with our folks on the spectrum or with individuals with other disabilities is they are now becoming a little bit more competitive because of the access to higher education and modifications that allow for that. Yet there's still that challenge when the rubber hits the road in the workplace. And one of the things that Jeff and I face on a regular basis is you have an individual who has attained traditional educational status, of whether it's post-secondary education. But it's those nuances that we all have to adapt to in the workplace that are very hard for our individuals on the spectrum or persons that have like deficits, like an individual with a traumatic brain injury. It's being able to accommodate and be flexible and to be able to switch gears in the middle of a job task. And those are the subtleties, or what's been coined before as the hidden curriculum. Those things that we can't assume will occur. We have to prepare for that, as well as the professionals and counselors that work with our individuals to get them into the job place. One of the challenges that Jeff and I see repeatedly is, yes, they can get the job, but it's keeping the job. And how do you help them? And it comes down to some of the social things and also down to being able to be flexible in a system that's very dynamic and changing.
So it's not just about working with your clients, but also working with the folks out in the work world.
Yes.
Jeffrey?
A great example. I had an individual who worked for a bookstore in the community. And one of his biggest problems was that he wanted to do a certain job and they wanted him to do a different job. His conception of what the job expectations were was different than what theirs was. And he did not get along with the person that was really his boss at the store.
That's never happened before.
he got along with her husband, but he wanted to work for him. And I kept telling him, he is not your boss, ultimately. Well, he's the person I want to talk to. I don't want to talk to her. And so this was a real challenge, getting to understand that he can't, well, I like the boxes this way. I like to put them up this way. And I'd say, but if she says to do it this way, you need to do it that way. He would tell me, well, that's stupid. That's a stupid way to do it. And so getting him to understand that maybe his way is better. I don't know. But if she tells you to do it that way, you need to go along with that unless you can show her that it's different. And you have to work on that.
Well, it sounds like a little bit of a case of arrested adolescence as far as I'm concerned, because that's stupid sounds like my 14-year-old right now. I don't want to do it that way. That's stupid.
Right. and as Jeff was saying, and Jared earlier, so the charge given to the parent from day one at age two with our daughter, it was, okay, we got to prepare for life beyond school.
Right.
And part of that is, you know, you can't anticipate. You have to be able to manage what's thrown your way. And if you think about all the twists and turns that we take on a daily basis to accommodate a social situation, that's when the age that Jared's children are in is when you start teaching that flexibility. You know, yes, they may want that static world, but because when you're working with a 25-year-old who's been able to control that, and then all of a sudden you're saying your world needs to change? It's
interesting because you think about the famous case of the character that's depicted in The Rain Man,
right.
The autistic savant, which is very unusual, obviously, and that just laborious attention to routine, day after day after day after day, that's
right.
Not necessarily a good thing.
But that might be one aspect of Asperger's or being on the spectrum, but it's only one component. Yet
mm-hmm.
many people see that and they say, when you say autism, they say, oh, the Rain Man.
Yeah.
And that's just maybe one component where they do fixate on certain things. But again, because people on the spectrum are different, each person is different and unique. Some people might present that in a more extreme way than others do. And that's very important to keep in mind, that's not the perseverating on a subject over and over and over again is not a positive thing per se in itself. But it's not necessarily, across the board
okay.
that everybody does that.
You know, one of the things in The Horse Boy that was brought out was they weren't sure, and of course they're not sure of really ultimately anything, but that taking him out of that regimen and taking him out of that familiar environment and exposing him to so many new things might have worked some magic itself, just the very exposure to new things and that success, as you mentioned, celebrating every success, or maybe it was Jared, along
victories.
The way, those victories, right.
And one component of that, he was writing, and those, I hope some folks will be able to see the film this evening, but if you're on a horse for that long, you're getting regulation. And what does perseveration provide? It gives you regulation in instances where you're looking for comfort. You're looking for it's calming to do something rote. And especially when you're trying to thrive in chaos and you can't make order out of it. So it's a natural propensity to go to that. You think of an infant when they're crying, what do? You rock them and they feel that comfort and then they can get then they're regulated again. Then they can go on to the next step. Same kind of concept, that you have when someone's kind of in a peaking, having a moment where they're having a hard time adjusting to the situation. And being on that horse for a long period of time and having to test the waters while you're regulating on that horse can give you some comfort, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. That he could – it was helpful that the horse was involved in all of that changing scenery every day.
And he was familiar with it. You know, he already had it in at his home
right.
base, and it was still a part of him, and he had his folks. So –
let's get an email in, 614-292-8513, if you want to give us a call, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This one is from Christina. She writes, my sister, the mother of an autistic son, always says that what he really needs the most is for people to give him a break and not label him as weird. One of his biggest problems is other kids making fun of him and teachers not understanding him. My nephew doesn't have a mean or malicious bone in his body, but he's the target of many who do. It's strange to me that he is the one labeled with a disorder, but the ones who pick on him are perfectly normal. Wow, that's interesting.
Boy.
I mean, it's obviously it's very interesting.
That is my mantra. Cans are for labels are for cans, not for people. And I don't use the label in the household. that's not who you are. And that speaks volumes to me. Because that's true. If you present an individual with the label first, you're going to find you're going to look for those things that support that label. But if that individual is just there with you and you're experiencing that individual, that's who they become. They don't become the label. The afterthoughts, almost when you are 25 years old and then that's what was going on. But you're looking at that individual. They haven't changed. They have a label, but that's a challenge.
One of the things was interesting at one of our reunion events. I had a young man come up to me, and he tends to sort of get into a lot of historical references and whatnot. And he said to me, he says, my uncle says to me, I'm really fixated on historical references because I have autism. And I said to him, well, I said, people on the spectrum sometimes do fixate on certain things, but I think your interest, the way you present it, is your character. And it blew him away that I said that. He actually keeps saying that to me every time I talk to him. He says, well, what do you mean by that? I said, you're an individual. I said, I'm an individual. I have certain things that are unique to me, to my personality. I said, you have a personality. You're a person. Everything that you do isn't defined by your autism. And that's really the mistake that people tend to make sometimes, is that, somebody has some sort of developmental challenge. That means that everything that they do somehow connects to that challenge. Mm-hmm. And it's not true. They have a personality. They live and breathe just like we do, like everyone does. And we all have those unique characteristics. And so I say, find those characteristics and make them shine.
Just like you would have anybody.
Right.
And Jeff, as far as Christina's email, Christina, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
What that says to me too is he needs miles, which has been often used. He needs miles with these individuals. They need to just have time with him and understand how he interacts with the world. And I think so often our society is so rushed that the more you slow down and the more that you are able to just be with that individual, that's when those labels start shedding. But if you're that's just one setting that they know this individual in school.
Mm-hmm.
That's not who he is at home. And it's that's a real challenge for parents and a real fear is the bullying. But that's where also the parents have to reach into their reserve and create those opportunities for their child.
It's just another suggestion on that line to Christina, to her sister. If there's some way of bringing in an individual, I mean, her nephew might have a difficult time talking to the class about his particular experiences. Sometimes it is hard for them to do that. But somebody else that's on the spectrum, a little bit older, that could maybe talk to the class or sit down with a group of the kids and explain what what it's all about, and what their interests are, what they do, and get them a chance to sort of sit and ask them questions back.
Are there people out there who will do that?
We actually have done that through Aspirations. We did a program with Pickerington back in December. We went over to the high school and we talked. We did a workshop with the typical teenagers in the high school classes. And then we did that. We worked with them, talked to them, answered their questions. And then we actually had lunch with some of the people that are in the special ed classes that have been that have autism.
What about the teachers? Because I know Worthington City Schools had a meeting a week ago or so, and there were a lot of complaints about special education in Worthington, and there were a lot of people who complained that the teachers just don't want to understand or don't take the time to understand kids on the spectrum. To pick on Worthington, but
yeah, that's interesting you bring that up because if you recall earlier in this segment, we were talking about advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a woman with an older son who has gone through that school district. And her response to this latest development is, I did not have that experience. But this woman also was very – and I'm not saying anything about the parents, mm-hmm. but – this individual's experience was very good with the school district, but it's such, you know, it's because a lot of effort was made to communicate, to challenge, to take the risk even when she was being told differently about her son. And so because of those the day-to-day dedication that she was able to give, it was a good experience for her. But it also can come down to just one culture in one school, mm-hmm. you know, because you can go to the next school and the culture is totally different. And it comes, you know, it's a top-down thing.
You know, the anthropologist in the movie, The Horse Boy, said that ours is the only society that separates or traditionally has separated people with autism or you know, disabilities in general. And that's changing over time. But I wondered, and that that's not the case in some societies, so it kind of gives you that sense of you're not just with them in a clinical or official setting like school or church or whatever. It's just they're everywhere, and it's not that big of a deal, and that they're better off for it.
Yeah, and I think it comes to comfort level. I think if you hide behind the label, then you start to create assumptions about that individual. It goes back to the labeling.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just living in the society and like, hey, this is Sue and you know, this is Sue and who we know her as, and that's it, you know, then some of those misconceptions fall to the wayside.
One of the things that we really try at Nyzaga Center is when we have social work interns or other interns coming in to work over the year, is to have them engage with the different populations at Nyzaga Center. And within the Aspirations program, one of the things that I emphasize to people is that these are young adults that are close to your age, maybe a little bit younger. They're just like you. They have some communication challenges. They need you to talk to them just like you talk to your friend. They don't need charity. They don't need you to pity them, because if that's what you're thinking, then, you know, why don't you go find some other program? I always emphasize that they need just you to engage with them and have a social time.
We're running out of time. That's that Sound of the Music. My guest, Jeffrey Siegel, program coordinator the Aspirations program coordinator at the OSU Nyzaga Center, and also Dr. Angela Denny, president of the Autism Society of Central Ohio, and also at the Nyzaga Center. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.